I'm going to call the meeting to order, the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. What we're going to do, members, is we're going to hear some brief testimony as we're getting settled here, and then we're going to move into the bill and the amendments. So we're going to hear, it's the Amendment A27. We have Representative Lanning here with his testifier. Representative Lanning, welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Maury Lanning from District 9A. We appear before you today in support of the A27 amendment to House File 1056. Currently in the state of Minnesota, there are some over 30 communities and a couple hundred school districts and colleges and organizations that have been using the Search Institute research results to help build developmental assets in youth. The Search Institute has identified 40 developmental assets, and their research has shown the assets that young people ought to have to grow up healthy and be not as prone to at-risk behaviors. Their research has found that the more of those assets that a young person has, the less likely they are to be involved in at-risk behaviors. I first learned about this research when I was Mayor of Moorhead back a dozen years ago. At that time, our school superintendent introduced me to Dr. Peter Benson, the head of the Search Institute. And we embarked on a journey as a community that is still alive and active today, doing a tremendous job. We have been using this research base to help build developmental assets in our young people. We've had some phenomenal success, including a dramatic decrease in juvenile crime as a result of our ability to add to their assets. This research, members of the committee, has also been used nationally. It's been national research, and the America's Promise that many of you, I'm sure, have heard about was really based and helped by the research. Where we're at right now, this amendment provision, what it does is it provides a grant to the Department of Education, who would in turn enter into an agreement with the Search Institute to help more communities get involved with asset building, developmental asset building in their youth, and also help existing initiatives with their ability to expand and enhance what they're currently doing. This would be a two-year project, and the Department of Education would evaluate it at the end of those 2 years to determine whether or not something like this works to their satisfaction and should be continued. With me today, Madam Chair and members, I have Nancy Tellett-Royce from St. Louis Park, who is on the staff, one of Dr. Benson's key staff members, and she would like to be able to also address this. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Lanning. Members, we're hearing some testimony as to the A27 amendment, and then we're going to proceed and go through our bill and our spreadsheet. So, you know, I'm going to have to ask for very short testimony, a minute or two. Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Nancy Tellett-Royce. I am the community liaison at Search Institute, and I also live in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and as many of you know, Search Institute is a national leader in mobilizing communities to give their young people the developmental assets that lead to healthier outcomes and help them become caring and competent and responsible adults. We started working with Minnesota communities in 1992, and Representative Lanning's community was one of the first, and many have added since then. We've worked with communities across Minnesota. They've made use of our research and our tools to help them strengthen their community efforts on behalf of young people. In addition, hundreds of Minnesota school districts have administered our survey and used our resources and those survey results to get a better picture of their young people and to improve the practices that they use with students. And we find that schools play a pivotal role in these Healthy Communities, Healthy Youth initiatives. Our research now includes survey data from over 2.5 million 6th through 12th graders across North America, and that research continues to demonstrate that increased levels of these developmental assets lead to improvements in academic achievement and also lead to decreases in smoking, drug and alcohol use, and other risky behaviors. What we know from experience with over 600 communities across North America is that when communities work together across sectors around the common goal of raising healthy young people, great things can happen. I'm here today to ask for your support for this A27 amendment so that we can rally Minnesota communities and deepen our support for their efforts by providing the coaching, the telephone consultation, the web-based tools, regional conferences, and other resources that will give them a way to share the best practices that they develop and to support the healthy development of all young people across this great state. I am also here because I am a Minnesota mother. I have had the good fortune to raise two sons in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, which launched the first asset building initiative in 1993 called Children First, the year my sons turned 6 and 9. I have seen the differences it makes when the Rotary partners with the Alternative High School to mentor students, when the local healthcare foundation partners with the school district to start a free health clinic for youth and their families, when the florist distributes carnations in a housing project so that young people can give their mother a gift on Mother's Day, and when the mayor hosts an annual youth summit so that young people can voice their opinion on community issues, when police officers play basketball with youth at the local parks, and when the language of developmental assets gives all of us a way to find something we can do to help contribute to the health of our young people. I want this for all young people in every community in Minnesota, and you can make this reality. Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, we're going to continue and go through our work, and we appreciate you coming and your testifying.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, real quickly, I helped bring the Healthy Communities Healthy Youth Initiative to St. Cloud actually a while ago, and I was a little disappointed to see that it's not on the list, but the developmental assets are so critical, and I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we'll proceed. Members, since we last met, and to the public, if you haven't heard this or if you're not familiar with this, on, let's see, was it Tuesday? Tuesday that the speaker asked me to come to her office, and there was good news. We did get our TANF target at that time after our bill was pretty much wrapped up. And so we got $24 million additional in our committee. Seven of that is has tails, and the rest is one-time money. But this is very good news. For all of you that are familiar with TANF funding, it primarily goes for child care. But it has put a lot of stress on the staff. And I want to thank them for staying late and working. I know some of them were here as late as 1 o'clock last night trying to figure out the spreadsheets and so forth. So Emily, Adrian's our fiscal analyst in particular, thank you. And Trish Kiefer and Sarah Benskofer and Patrick McCormick, we want to thank you for all your work, because I know when you think you're done with a bill and then you have to open it back up, it's not easy. So we very much appreciate all your help. With that in particular, Ms. Adrian, thank you for all your work, because it really came down on you. If you could walk us through the changes in the spreadsheet.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair members, it's been a lot of fun working on the spreadsheet.
Good.
We'll see if I still feel that way in a few days or so. What I want to do, you should have a new and revised copy of the spreadsheet. And I won't go through it line by line this time, because a lot of it has not changed. But what I will do is point out a few things that did change. If you will look at one of the first changes is on line 7. And this is the governor's recommendation of the early childhood scholarship. And I don't know if anyone would have noticed this, but I'll point out in the fund column, it says GF/T. And the reason I did that was the governor recommended using general fund money for it, and what the recommendation from the committee is to use some TANF funds for that and do it as a one-time appropriation. So the scholarship fund is going to be funded in the first biennium at $2.5 million. And then right below that, the scholarship demonstration projects, which is the rural pilot program, that was increased by $500,000, so that's also going to be financed at $2.5 million. The next...
Excuse me.
Sure.
Representative Murphy.
What was the last thing that you said? What line was that?
On line 8, right below the Governor's Scholarship Initiative. It's called Scholarship Demonstration Projects, and that it has been increased. It was $2 million for the first biennium, and now it's 2.5.
Ms. Adriaans, I'm going to try not to do too many editorial comments, but our committee had decided to do the two rural pilots and run them through MELF, and we still are going to do that, and this adds the additional Governor's Scholarship Initiatives, and I believe they run it through the Department of Education. So it kind of it goes along with that smorgasbord idea where you have a variety of things in the bill so that when we move forward here, we'd have some good things to pick from.
Madam Chair, isn't there also an increase on line 6?
Let's see. Representative Nornes, Ms. Adriaans?
Oh, the hubs.
Yes.
Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Nornes. yes, that is now being funded at $2 million for the biennium, again in one-time money. And it was previously funded at $1.5 million. So there's an extra $500,000 there as well.
And that, just to say, that was, we predict it's about $500,000 per hub. So this will allow us for four pilot hubs. Ms. Adriaans?
Okay, the next change, I believe, everything else under school readiness remained the same. If you'll look down under Community Education and Prevention on line 28, the after-school community learning grants, these were increased. They're going to be funded now at $5 million. That's an increase of about $2.6 million over the previous spreadsheet that we had. And then on line 30, the Youth Healthy Development Grant, this initiative was not in the prior spreadsheet, so this is new. And that is a one-time appropriation of $250,000 per year. Then under self-sufficiency and lifelong learning, the adult basic education aid, that was the one that was kind of wrapped up with the GED tests. And what was done was the GED test that's on line 35, that total was reduced by $400,000, and then that money was put into the adult basic education aid, the overall program. And I think that's everything on this first page, so you can go to the second page. At the very top on lines 43, 44, and 45, these are just the Minnesota Department of Education totals. So the first line is the TANF total, and then the general fund total, and then the total appropriations recommended from the committee to the agency. So in terms of TANF money, what is recommended is $2.5 million for the 2008-09 biennium. And then, now this section I did change a little bit.
Madam Chair.
Representative Eastland.
So where is that $2.5 million in the education part? Is that all in the governor's scholarship
yes.
program? Okay.
Ms. Adriaans, that's what I couldn't quite tell.
So it's not both general fund and TANF. It's all TANF.
Yes. I'm sorry if that was unclear, Madam Chair and Representative. What the governor recommended when his initial recommendation that you'll see under the column that says governor's recommendation for 2008 and 9, mm-hmm. his recommendation was all funded with general fund money. And then the funding that will come from the committee, the $2.5 million, that will be all TANF.
Ms. Adriaans?
Madam Chair, members. So now under Department of Human Services, a lot of the changes, some of them are just formatting. So the headings are a little bit different, but the program stayed the same. So, for example, on line 49, the first program heading is called Legal and Regulatory, and that's just because that's the way the agency looks at it, and in the omnibus bill, that's how it will be laid out. So child care licensing, that was in the spreadsheet before, and it's funded at the same level. Now, the revenues and pass-through, this is where you'll see all of the TANF funding that's going toward the agency. is under this, so from lines 52 to 59. And the total TANF spending that we're doing for this agency in the first biennium in 2008-09 is $22.5 million. And
Madam Chair, could we back up a little bit? The line 50, the child care licensing, that was in the spreadsheet before?
Yes.
So what line was that on before in the spreadsheet?
Representative Eastland, that was where the we're capping the $50 copays, and then we're picking up those background checks. So
it was line number 51. And I apologize for the confusion because I know it sort of has changed it, but
Ms. Adrians, and I think when we were talking about the first page, we were talking about the Department of Education, and if I'm not mistaken, with this spreadsheet we're talking, when you say the department, you're referring to Department of Human Services?
Absolutely.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly. So for all of the way that the TANF money will be spent for the Department of Human Services will be to fund some of the MFIP Child Care Assistance Grants, the overall program, along with the basic sliding fee child care assistance grants. And the money that goes into the general basic sliding fee child care assistance grants, that will be put towards decreasing waiting lists. So you'll see there will be two lines for that. So on line 54, you'll see that there's a total of $11.5 million for the first biennium. And that's all TANF funding. And then if you look down to line 73, that's general funding that will go toward the same purpose. And on line 55 and 56, this is what this will do is decrease co-payments. And a lot of these initiatives, decreasing co-payments, also there's absent day policy, restoring half day rates. What happens is they're split between MFIP and basic sliding fee. So that's why you'll see them listed twice, but one line item for MFIP and then one line item for basic sliding fee. And then on lines 57 and 58, that's the maximum rate, increasing the maximum rate up to 2%. That will go towards both MFIP and basic sliding fee. So that's all the TANF funding.
Could I ask another question, Madam Chair?
Representative Eastland?
On 55 and 56, this is just kind of a technical question, but the decreased co-payments is all one-time funding. So how is that going to work in terms of?
Well, that's a good question, Madam Chair and Representative Eastland. Since we received so much in one-time payment, what you can do is put a lot of it into the first biennium, the 2008-09. And then if you'll look down on line 66 under MFIP, there's another line item for decreasing the co-payments. And this is general fund money where you'll see this is where it gets funded in 2010 and 11.
So where's the so that all we're doing is showing the tails there.
Representative Eastland, I think so. We were not allowed to exceed our tails, so I am thinking that fits in our tails targets and meets our requirements.
We're right on the dollar for our tails targets.
Okay. So that should be should be accurate and absorbable and so forth. Yes.
And I think you'll also see another line item for the basic sliding fee portion of decreasing the co-payments. On line 76, and that's where there's no money spent on that for general fund in 2008-09, but you'll see in the tails for 2010 and 11, there is general fund money spent for that, just because we didn't have as much TANF to work with in the tails as we did in the first one. But that's a very good question. And let's see. So the co-payments, that initiative is new for this spreadsheet. We did not have that in the last spreadsheet. And one thing that was taken out was the deferral part. So that is not in this spreadsheet. And then the other change, on line 83, at the very bottom under child care development, child care services grants were increased by $3 million up to $5 million for the biennium.
That's a governor's initiative, so it's going to allow, I guess it's Peterson's initiative. I was thinking it was, there's two different that sound alike, okay. We can explain these. We'll get into the amendments.
And then if you'll go to page 3, the final page. On line 86, the Friends and Family Network Grant Program, this was reduced by $500,000, so now the funding total is $1.5 million. And on line 87, right below that, is this is a new program that was not in the prior spreadsheet or language either. And this is, it's called Increased Provider Connections. And this will be ongoing funding, and it's at $200,000 for each biennium. For each biennium. So that'll be funded at $100,000 per year. And then the only other change is on line 94. And this is under, the heading is Children and Economic Assistance Operations. And I did not have this in the spreadsheet before, but I was made aware that in order to do some of the parts of House File 920, there would be programming costs to the agency, and that's at a cost of $124,000 for just the first year for fiscal year 2008. So that's a one-time cost as well. And then, for the agency, you'll see the DHS TANF and general fund totals right below that. And then at the very bottom, these are the same totals we had before. And where you'll see what our target number is that we had to hit, it's on line 105. And it's one of the columns kind of right in the middle under House recommendation for fiscal year 2008 and 9. And the total is $459,755,000. And the number right above that is our TANF target, the $25 million. And for the tails, that target is just follow over to the right. It's about three columns from the right-hand side under House recommendations for fiscal year 2010 and 11. And our general fund target was $457,292,000. And the number right above that is $8 million, and that was our TANF target for the tails.
Thank you very much. I know that was a lot of work and a lot of changes since last time, so we appreciate that. I'm not sure if I said to the committee and to the public that we're not taking final action on this bill today. These changes have brought so many both fiscal changes and language changes that we could not get the bill out in enough time to get the amendments and to get it turned around. So we are taking final action on the bill on Monday at 215 to 345, or 215 to 345 in room 5. So we'll have our normal hour and a half committee time. We will be taking up amendments at that time and final passage of the bill. We wanted to go ahead with the meeting today, obviously, to explain it and so everybody's familiar with it, also so that the public can testify. But at the meeting on Monday is when we will be taking up amendments and final passage. With that, we do have the language we need to pass. First of all, we need to do the approval of the minutes. Representative Wardlow, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I haven't memorized them, but I do move approval.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow moves approval of the minutes for March 20th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are passed. Members, we will look at Amendment A27. It says H1056 A27. Members, these amendments are really just to put the bill in the order we need it so that we can get ready to do the final amendments on Monday. This amendment includes the copay structure language, the maximum rates language that fits the 2% we're funding in this bill, and the governor's scholarship language. This amendment also includes funding for the Search Institute, which Representative Lanning talked about, and several smaller word changes. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment passes. Next, we'll look at A22, so H1056A22.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I'm getting a premonition here that maybe House Research may be taking a look at the A27 amendment. There may be a technical correction to it. Like, I'm getting the impression that maybe a note was passed to me because my name's Pat and it was intended for another person named Pat. And maybe something will be happening here. You might want to talk to House Research. Just a thought. I could be wrong.
Might need to take it up for reconsideration. Is that?
I think so, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, thought has come to me.
Mr. McCormick.
Page 5, line 2. We should perhaps strike 180% and install 185%.
Okay, members, first of all, let's get the amendment back up for reconsideration, the A27 amendment. Mr. McCormick, could you repeat that?
Madam Chair, the A27 amendment on page 5, line 2, we need to strike 180% and insert 185%.
That's the technical change. Okay. All those in favor? Any discussion? Okay, so move to reconsider the amendment, right? Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Okay. The amendment is up for reconsideration, and we're going to, we have an amendment. Mr. McCormick, you want to repeat that, and then we'll move the amendment.
Madam Chair, the amendment is on page 5, line 2, strike 188 and insert 185.
Okay. The chair moves the amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. Okay, any further?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
That was actually kind of impressive. I want to see if Representative Garofalo can do it again.
Is that a challenge?
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
I'm getting another premonition that we're here on Labor Day. I don't know.
Uh-oh. I think we might. Are we ready to?
Somebody
okay. Okay, so we need to move the amendment, right? Okay. Okay. Now, the A22 amendment. We can bring that up. The A22. The chair moves the A22 amendment. What I'll tell you, what this amendment does, it includes language from House File 2033. Which is one of my bills, which was also amended into House File 1276, which was Representative Aaron Murphy's professional development bill. This language is providing funding for Hennepin and Ramsey County to better facilitate with the county and licensed child care providers on services and resources available to report to the legislature.
My apologies. I'm sorry. I'm just a stickler for this stuff. We actually adopted the amendment to A27. We didn't actually not adopt the amendment to A27.
Thank you. I thought that Representative Garofalo.
I'm sure I might have an extra technical amendment as well on A27 since we haven't adopted the amendment.
Okay. Wow. Okay, members, A27, since we're still on that.
Sorry.
No, I actually wondered about that. So.
Madam Chair, if you look at page 2, line 39 of the A27 amendment,
Mr. McCormick,
you'll see two figures for a minimum parent fee. One is $10 and one is $5 per month. I think the intention was to strike the $10 figure and leave the $5 figure. I will be happy to be staying corrected if I'm wrong.
Madam Chair, I'll move reconsideration of the A27 amendment. Don't we have to reconsider it? Well, that's right.
I think we never moved it on officially, so, but thank you. I always, by the time committee's almost done, we usually have the procedures down. Mr. McCormick, could you just repeat that?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. We're looking at page 2, line 39. We're going to be striking $10.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. Now let's move the A27 amendment for reconsideration. Any discussion? Okay, just move the A27 amendment. And any discussion?
As amended.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A27 is adopted. Okay, the A22 amendment. We'll move the chair moves the A22 amendment. And as I explained, this is going to put some language in here, which is for the counties. It also includes innovative language for Head Start. You probably remember that was Representative Dabney's bill, which provides for the use of 10% of the funds allocated for Head Start to be used for innovative services. And there also are some small word changes. Any discussion? All those in favor of A22 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. A22 is adopted. And members, we'll have a chance to look at all of this for amending it. The last one is, oh, there's three more. Okay, how about A24? Okay. This is just putting the fiscal and the money amounts in the shape that we need that. So the chair moves H1056, A24. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A24 is adopted. There's one more fiscal one, which is A23. So again, A23 is an appropriations amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Okay. A23 is adopted. The last one is at a completely different number, PJM 1056B1. We should be able to find that one. This is an amendment that the chair moves, PJM 1056B1. This is an amendment that adds licensed family child care providers to those who can qualify to receive funding through the governor's targeted training program. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 1056B1 is adopted. So now I think the bill is in the shape that we want it. If there aren't any questions from the members, we're going to proceed with public testimony. Representative Eastland?
I know staff has worked hard and long, and I guess what I'm concerned about is when will we see an engrossed version of this? We'd kind of talked about 24 hours from now to have our amendments ready, but we're not going to have an engrossed version to be able to write amendments to for until when, I guess, is kind of the question.
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, members, I guess I'll give you a two-level answer to that. One is that until the committee does a final action on the bill, there won't be an official engrossment of the bill. We can attempt to get an unofficial engrossment done. However, the advisor's office is working flat out around the clock, and I can't promise that you'll get one any sooner than sometime next week. Therefore, in drafting amendments, I have essentially two options. One is that it's possible to draft a deed, and both of these, by the way, have been used in many instances in funding divisions over the years in our common practices. Every division does it differently. The first method is to craft an amendment that engrosses to all the documents in front of you, so that it might have a part of the amendment which amends the A070428, and a part that amends the A24, and a part that amends the A23. And on the floor, that's the only kind of amendment that you'd be allowed to do. In a funding division, a second kind of amendment is often considered appropriate, and that's because you're building an omnibus bill. And so, and the second type of amendment would say, for example, suppose that member X wanted to shift money from the new TANF appropriations into ECFB. You would do not an amendment, but a motion. The motion would be written up, handed out, would be clear to everybody in the room, and the motion would say something along the lines of Representative X moves to remove the language and funding for the TANF appropriation and some description of where that would be, and shift that to the ECFE program where that would be. Staff is instructed to amend the bill accordingly. If that motion amendment is acceptable to the committee, it should be written clearly enough so that everybody in the room knows what staff would be then going to do. My recommendation, we can try for an unofficial engrossment. My recommendation is that you, if you're comfortable, allow some of these emotion amendments where if you're writing language, that's different. In the writing language, we'll show the language. But if you allow the emotion amendments, and if they're clear enough, then if Representative Eastland, if you have a amendment that is shifting money, everybody in the room will be able to see it. And then if it is adopted, when staff would go and actually do the page and lines, and then that would be passed on to the next committee, Representative Murphy's committee. In some sense, it's a choice of the members and of the chair whether to accept the amendments or not.
Representative Eastland.
Tell me if this is what I heard. Tell me if this is right. So basically, what we would do if we took option two, is that we would use maybe the spreadsheet, and we could refer we could see how money moved on the spreadsheet, and that would be and just describe that so everybody could see it visually what was happening, and then if there was language that needed to follow. Just to make that technical change in the bill, it would just be an instruction to the staff to do whatever language is necessary to make that happen. But if there was policy language or other things that are in the bill, we would have to write that specifically as an amendment to all three all of the documents. Or could we write that as an amendment?
Chair, Representative Eastland, you'd probably write policy amendments as amendments directly to the A070428, which is the document in front of you. And so, for example, if you decided to change the eligibility for a formula, for a program, I would do an amendment to the A07-0428, and that would dovetail. It's only on the financial amendments where there's a problem. Or if, for example, the governor's scholarship program is now contained in the A27 amendment. If you want to change the governor's scholarship program, I would only amend the A27 amendment. It would be very clear, very simple. Everybody could follow it. So I don't really see a problem for policy amendments. I think that for financial amendments, the shifting funds structure has been used in many cases. In many cases, members will do it with an oral motion to shift money. I think it's usually better if you can get these in writing so everyone can see and actually understand. But here's a case. Here's an example. Suppose that someone wanted to defund the half-day initiative. You might have an amendment to say we remove the funding from the half-day initiative on the page and line of this spreadsheet and make relevant language changes. If that was adopted, in drafting the bill for the final transfer, I would go find the page in line with the half day, strike that, and make the appropriation change. And as long as it's clear to everybody in the room what the amendment is instructing staff to do, then members know and there are no surprises. And members can always ask, how would this engross, and then we can try to orally explain it to you.
Representative Eastland?
I think it makes sense to me. I guess Mike, do you have any questions about how this is going to work? So we're okay? Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you. I actually have two questions on how this is going to work because, one, we do that. We would want the amendments by 2:15 or 4 o'clock on Friday. 4 o'clock. tomorrow. The one rule we have about transferring money is, Mr. McCormick, I'd like to review this, both what members can and cannot do with the TANF funds, and what members can or cannot do if they delete. Can they just delete a program and not reinvest the money somewhere else?
Madam Chair, I think it's always in order to delete funding and not respend it. So you can delete any funding in the bill and leave that on the bottom line, and the committee will then underspend its target. Secondly, it's always in order to shift expenditures from one general fund expenditure within the purview of the bill to another. So, for example, from ECFE to ABE, that's appropriate. From ECFE to highway, a highway fund would be inappropriate because highway funds are not in the purview of the bill. The third area is shifting money from TANF expenditures to general fund expenditures, and these some of those are in order. In order in terms of what is allowed is one thing. Whether they work in the real world is another thing. And here you get into complex questions of the maintenance of effort requirements under federal law, and if expenditures in this committee often are used to meet maintenance of effort requirements. And if the committee adopted a TANF amendment which A, inappropriately spent TANF money under federal law, or B, damaged the state's maintenance of effort, then in all likelihood the committee would probably be told to take it out at a later date. The committee, many bills have gone forward with language that is inappropriate. I'm not saying you can't do that, but I think it's a good argument. It's not out of order to adopt an unworkable amendment. Lord knows. but it's probably not wise, and usually the people that should be pointed out, and the fiscal officer or someone from one of the agencies would likely want to testify if that kind of amendment was put on the table.
All right, and Mr. McCormick, I mean, as a chair, I want to make it very clear that we need to be very clear on the rules, and we will be getting the amendments 24 hours ahead, and yes, we will be looking ahead of time whether we think they fit or not. I would hope it's in all of our best interests just to follow the rules as close as we can. We know that. We've been around here for a while, Representative Eastland, so, and to anybody that's the new members on the committee, sometimes this is very tricky, but it's best if we can stick within those rules and hopefully just have an orderly process as we go through this on Monday. Are there any other questions? Okay, good. Well, we will look forward to the amendments and the process on Monday at 2:15, and we are going to have some public testimony until 5:30. I'm going to call you up in twos. So first we'll have Todd Otis and Ann Kana Roth, and then Carol Spector and Julie Quist. Just thank you to all the committee members for your hard work. It's been a lot of patience in getting this bill together, so, and hanging in there with it. So thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
I'm Todd Otis, president of Ready for K.
And Ann Kana Roth from Child Care Works.
I was thinking I should ask Representative Garofalo what I'm going to say, because he knows more than I do about the future. But thank you for the opportunity to visit about this bill. This is really an important subject. I guess to start with, I want to reiterate, this is an early learning committee. This is an education committee. And I think that as we go across the state, we know that this is of paramount concern to people. We polled on the subject a year ago, and the public really views early education as at least as important. Getting kids ready for K is important as quality K-12. So you're doing really important work. And I think you've done an excellent job with what you've been handed. I do think that the budget target for this committee is too small for the task that needs to be done. But I think given what you have been assigned, there are really good proposals in this bill. Let me just go through some of what I think are the highlights. And make a couple of other comments, and I will try to be brief. I think it's really good that you're building on existing programs that work and restoring the cuts in Head Start and ECFE and school readiness. I think that we think that putting at-risk kids in quality programs are just is the best possible strategy for getting them ready for K with all the follow-up benefits that that has. We like the emphasis on at-risk kids. As Art Rolnick has said, that's where you get the biggest return on investment. I think you do a good job in this bill focusing on those children. One of our principles of Ready for K is the parents are at the center of everything. And we think that in your support of expanding the scholarship concept to the rural areas as well as funding ECFE, you keep parents right at the center where they ought to be in this whole process. And I think that's really great. One little thing that may not seem important to you, but I really think strategically is important, is the broadening of the school readiness assessment. This is so important that eventually our whole state would know that every child entering kindergarten would get one of these assessments so that parents and providers would know what the K-12 system is looking for. And there would be a link between those two worlds that could be really valuable. So I think that's important, and I think the pilot hubs that you have incorporated in this bill would also put K-12 and early childhood in the same world and draw early childhood people and programs into the K-12 system better is a really good improvement. I think that the underlying reason this matters so much in many ways is narrowing the achievement gap. And I think as you talk to your colleagues and sell this to the broader body, and also as this process unwinds, hopefully get even more money in it, this is really the single best element in narrowing the achievement gap that we have. That's you've heard from Dr. Arthur Reynolds, who's talked about the value of early quality, early learning. So this is I got a lot of elements to recommend it. Our original proposal was for $300 million to move the needle of the number of kids who are ready for K from 50% now to 80% in the future. And I think that's where the focus ought to remain. Are we really reaching kids and getting them the quality experiences they need or not? So even though I think you've put a really well-balanced, imaginative system-building bill together, I don't think you've been given the tools to do the job in terms of resources to move that needle significantly. So on the one hand, I think you're laying a foundation for a new kind of system that ties early learning to K-12 better, helps develop more professional quality, helps keep parents at the center of the whole picture, but in the end, you're going to need to have resources and support at a higher level if we're going to reach that 80% of kids ready for K by 2012. So I just, bottom line, congratulations for having played the hand you were dealt extremely well. I wish you well in the process. If we can be a resource to you down the road, I hope you'll feel free to let us know.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, my name is Ann Kana Roth, and I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works, and I'm very happy to be here today to make a few comments on this bill, and I'll be very brief. But as the committee has heard throughout the session, you've heard about how child care really is two things at the very least. It is work support for families, particularly low-income families who need child care to stay in the workforce. It also is the early educational experience for the vast majority of kids in this state. We know that mothers in Minnesota are in the workforce in large numbers, and so the majority of children are in some type of child care settings, and the quality of that child care is very important. I think this bill does a great job, again, as Mr. Otis had said, with the resources the committee was given, and of course we do wish those resources were larger, but I think the committee makes some very strategic investments in both of those categories. You provide some funds in this bill for a streamlined and top-notch new professional development system for early childhood teachers that was in Representative Peterson's bill, and we think that that's critical to ensure that child care providers are well prepared to do the important job that they have to do. to have new grant dollars in this bill for child care providers to become licensed, to become accredited, to improve the quality of their facilities. And that, too, is extremely important to child care providers and to families across the state. And you have a wonderful pilot project in this bill that allows low-income children to have high-quality care through the service agreements between the state and high-quality providers. For low-income families, you've done some wonderful improvements in the child care assistance program. Problems that stemmed from the budget cuts in 2003 are fixed in part, including remedying the policy changes that saved money but did hurt low-income families' ability to access child care. The House bill makes the state's child care assistance program more affordable through lower parent co-payments, increases reimbursement rates for child care providers, which makes it easier for those providers to care for the state's subsidized children. And with the new TANF dollars that the committee was given, the waiting list in Minnesota for the child care assistance program, which now is 2,800 families throughout the state, will be decreased dramatically. And we thank the committee for putting some dollars there. That will be much appreciated by families across the state. There's still going to be much for this committee to do in the future, in the next year and coming bienniums, but we think this is a great start, and we want to say thank you on behalf of the families and the children in this state.
Thank you. And we should also thank Representative Murphy, because she helped develop the TANF targets here. So thanks for all your help with that. Good. Well, thanks. If there's questions, we're probably going to kind of go through folks without. We could take questions maybe at the end. Carol Spector and Julie Quist. After that, we'll have Michelle Fallon and Ann McCulley. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carol Spector, and I'm the Advocacy and Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. I can keep my remarks very brief because the two people who've gone before me and what we heard on Tuesday also really is the breadth of my comments as well. We have talked a lot about the investment in children and the importance of investing in children, and somewhat level of disappointment in the resources given to this committee to do that. But as so strongly stated by Mr. Otis and Ms. Kaner-Roth, what this committee has done with the target is a very strong bill, investing in children. As Ms. Kaner-Roth stated, that child care is a work support for families and the early learning for children. And it has really been starved over the past few years. And so what you have put into child care will really be a good step forward in increasing access and affordability and quality of child care for children, especially children in low-income families with hardworking parents. So I just want to thank the committee and the Madam Chair for your leadership on this issue. And we look forward to continuing to work together.
Thank you. Next, Julie Quist, I don't think, is here, and so we'll have Michelle Fallon and Ann McCulley. And after that, it's Valerie Doslin and Laura LaCroix. Okay. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to state your name for the record.
I'm Michelle Fallon. I work for the University of Minnesota, the Center for Early Education and Development, and specifically I'm the director of the Baby Space Partnership, which is a small program that's implementing family support services into child cares that target low-income families. Specifically, the four of the programs I work with are Strong Beginnings Centers in Minneapolis. And we came together as the Child Care Advocacy Work Group in righteous indignation last year when DHS reinterpreted the policy on third-party contributions to families' co-pays who were for subsidized child care. And we're very appreciative of the outcome of that. And the next target for this group that is comprised of child care providers and other folks interested in child care for low-income families, they wanted to address the 25-day absence rule. And not knowing that much about it myself, I was a little thought, well, all right. But once we really began to share the effects that was having on the child cares that were serving or that were serving primarily subsidized families, it became clear that this was a very significant barrier for both the for some of the families as well as the providers and their ability to continue to serve them. And I'm so grateful for the fact that you have listened to these voices and made some important changes in that policy. And I think just so that you understand what you've done in making those changes, when we tried to gather some statistics, some of the outstate child cares, the counties using the MEC squared were able to let us know that approximately 4% of the families that were subsidized families were being adversely affected by the 25-day absence rule. Compared to the centers that we pulled here in Hennepin County, specifically the Strong Beginning Centers and the programs serving the teenage parents, 10 to 60% of those centers were being adversely affected by that rule. And so when we have programs like Strong Beginnings in Hennepin County that serve a minimum of 65% low-income families, we have 79% of those children coming out of those child care programs who are at or above expectations on the beginning kindergarten assessment in the Minneapolis School District, compared to 57% of all entering kindergartners. It is so cool. It really works. And yet these are the programs that were being most adversely affected by the 25-day absence rule as it stood. So we are very appreciative. I would want to leave you with one inspirational story and a conversation with Kim Aguilar, who's the director of Northside Child Development Center in Minneapolis. They serve 112 children in North Minneapolis, and they recently, in a grant writing project, realized that 75% of the families they serve are living on $9,000 a year or less. And 100% of the children they serve are receiving child care subsidy. And 86% of their children on the beginning kindergarten assessment this last year were at or above expectations for entering kindergarten. So we know what works, and you have what you've done in this bill, you're really helping us actualize what we know, the resources that we have and what we know works for children. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and I'm trying not to editorialize, but we do appreciate you and all the advocates that have worked with us on some of these policies, because it is hard for us as legislators to know often what the impact is on families. But I will let you know one of our goals is to reduce and eliminate the barriers that families have, and there have been lots put in place over the last couple of years, so it's good to hear that can start turning around. And then just to say to everybody in the room, we're going to need your help. It's not like once we pass this bill, it's in law. It's got a long way to go. So we sure appreciate your help to help other legislators understand the importance of provisions like that.
It's a privilege.
Representative Murphy?
Then could we have those statistics again around the $9,000 family income?
Okay, but I hope I have this right. This is my old memory from my conversation with Kim. In addition to, I think you got the talking points on the 25-day absence rule at one of your meetings. But this is Northside Child Development Center, which is funded through Catholic Charities. They serve 112 children, and they're a Strong Beginning Center. According to what Kim told me in her calculation, 75% of their families that serve North Minneapolis are living on $9,000 or less a year. And 100% of them are at the center receiving child care subsidy. But 86% of their children last year entering kindergarten were at or above expectations on the beginning kindergarten assessment. Isn't that awesome?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, thank you. And you can send
there.
A follow-up email if you like, and we can get it around to people in writing, too.
Yeah.
So thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, I'm Ann McCulley with Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network, and I will be very brief. I, too, am very pleased to be able to be here and to say thank you on behalf of the Child Care Resource and Referral Network and the parents and providers we serve around the state. I'd like to thank you for addressing early care and education issues on three specific levels. First, for additional funding for the Child Care Assistance Program. As agencies that hear from and interact with parents on a daily basis, we're well aware of the barriers that they face in accessing and keeping quality care. By addressing the waiting list, the copay structure, and child care provider rates, you're helping to whittle away at the barriers that have only been growing for the past several years. I also want to thank you for, pardon me, acknowledging the importance of building the capacity of the field, grants, additional professional development opportunities for child care providers. As we continue to acknowledge the important role of providers in preparing young children for success in school and in life, and indeed as we expect more of them along the lines of school readiness, it's incumbent on us to continue to support them with necessary resources to fulfill this role, and I thank you for that. Finally, I want to thank you for broadening your scope to include some funding for efforts to reach out to those who are traditionally underserved in most of our more formal programs, and that the family, friend, and neighbor providers. You heard in testimony that these providers also need support and want connections to one another. As we've described in previous testimony, the Child Care Resource and Referral System's goal is quality care and education for every child. Thank you for your part in moving us toward this goal through your legislation that supports parents and providers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. We I saw that Julie Quist came in, so Julie, we're working our way through the list. So you're up with Valerie Doslin. Whoever maybe gets to the table first can start. Valerie's going to get there first. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I am here today on behalf of the Minnesota Community Education Association. We just wanted to thank the chair and the members of the committee for your efforts to restore the cuts to early childhood family education and to school readiness. These programs are a very important part in helping children prepare for school and improving school readiness. And I just wanted to extend the association's offer to help in the future, and hopefully when we come to conference committee negotiations, the target for early childhood will be an additional amount, and any help we can do, please let us know. And also, if you are home on Easter break and would like to tour your ECFE or school readiness program, please let us know.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Julie Quist. I'm with EdWatch. And I would like to address Section 25, which is the scholarship demonstration projects. And the concern that we have is the role of the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation in setting quality rating standards that will be used in this program. The Minnesota Early Learning Foundation is a private organization, a nonprofit that is totally unaccountable to public, to the legislature. They just the accountability section, as you are aware, was removed from the law, which is in an earlier section of this bill. So there is, to my knowledge, there is nobody on this committee, unless you know, correct me if I'm wrong, who has actually seen what their quality rating system is, and. We are concerned that some of the an unelectable and unaccountable independent nonprofit organization should be given this kind of oversight. The quality standards that they are overseeing, you know, that just gives them more authority than they should have. That's our concern.
Okay. Ms. Quist, I guess what I would like to address a couple things just so we're clear, because we went over at the beginning of the meeting, we got a TANF target 2 days ago. And so yeah, we now incorporated some new provisions into the bill, and the bill has changed to the tune of about $24 million. We have put in another scholarship program, so I would like you a couple things. One, to look at the new one, which is the structure the governor recommended. So we now have two different programs going through, one that goes through the governor's structure and MDE, and the other that goes through MELF and through the pilots. The idea is to get all the language on the table for the conference committee so that they legislators can make those kinds of decisions, and because we are also have a difference of opinion about which process to use. The rural pilots program that we have recommended does go through MELF primarily because, and I'm just going to add a tour, I just want you to understand the rationale behind this, because they are doing the other pilot programs and they were missing a rural component, so it follows them. We in this bill do put some reporting relationship requirements with MELF. We're creating a legislative advisory committee in this bill where two legislators from each caucus would be appointed to be on a liaison committee with MELF and talk back and forth with them, provided that if we do the rural pilots, then we have a relationship with them. If we don't, then obviously that would change if the governor's scholarship program goes into place, or potentially, you know, there's the Senate one. There's so many versions out there. It could change. So I just want you to know there's a lot of different things continue to happen on that, and we appreciate your comments. I think we've been hearing a little bit of this and that on this as well, and the role of MELF is definitely up for debate. So thank you for sharing your concerns.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Laura LaCroix, and then I am going to open up testimony to anybody in the audience that might want to testify. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura LaCroix DeLune. I'm the Executive Director of Youth Community Connections. We support after-school and summer programs for school-age kids. I, too, am here to thank the committee for, and you, Madam Chair, for investing and reinvesting in school-age care children and youth. Not only does this committee have the purview of early childhood, but it also deals with all the school-age care programs. And in this bill, you're able to reinvest in school-age care and summer enrichment programs. As you've heard me say before in this committee, we believe that these are the types of programs that give young people an opportunity to engage in meaningful opportunities and to avoid crime. We've been able to gain support from a lot of different players along with this committee and have a letter of support from the Minnesota Police and Peace Officers Association that we'd be happy to pass around as well to committee members, letting you know that these are important investments in communities across the state. Again, we also recognize that you had very small targets and wanted to, again, offer our support to you as you move forward through the process. We've been able to secure the challenge grant, as you've heard us talk about in earlier testimony, from private foundations that would match state investments in after-school programs for youth. We again want to stand here and say we offer our support to you in any way we can to as you move through the process to try to achieve that goal with us. So with that, Madam Chair, members, again, thank you for your time.
Well, Ms. LaCroix, we have a request for you. Did you see that it's up to $5 million?
I did, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
So are you going to talk to the McKnight Foundation about potentially matching that?
We are going to work with you and members of the Senate. The McKnight board has made their commitment. They don't meet again until after session, so their offer stands as is. But we will work to negotiate with them as much as we possibly can.
Well, I'd like to see us all negotiate Absolutely. Further on this and to see if we could get a match in place. I think that would be very helpful. So
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have, Karen Bradley. Be next from had signed up. Is there anyone else that would want to come? You can come forward at this time.
Madam Chair,
Representative Wardlow.
Karen Bradley's from my district. She used to go to the school that I used to teach in. I started teaching when I was 12, and
how well I turned out.
And she's a child care provider in Eagan, extraordinaire. Mm. I visited her home where she. Has her children, or cares for the children, and she's outstanding and one of the better ones you could ever find, I think.
That's good to hear. Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you. Wow.
What an introduction.
That's good. Do I have to do it again? Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Karen Bradley. I'm a family child care provider in Eagan. Just a couple things, and I'll be brief and thank you along with everyone else. Reducing the licensing fee will be extremely helpful to a lot of outstate and newer providers. So thank you for that. $250 may seem like a lot to some, may not to others, but to a lot of people, it is a lot, especially when they're starting out. As I told Representative Wardlow when he sat with me in my family room and kids came up and offered him babies and bottles and coffee and things like that, teaching kids to be ready for kindergarten, ready for school, it's not rocket science. Everything that I need is right there in my living room, my backyard, in my park. I just need to be a quality provider. I need to know what I need to know. I need to be well trained. I need more than 8 hours of training, although 6 to 8 was good, and more would even be better. Again, that may not be terribly popular with some providers, but they need to know a lot about children, especially child development. And so quality training for providers will lead to, you know, more quality education. Support and resources for providers, working with the other nonprofit groups, and the grants, things I was reading through, those can be very helpful to people. They need resources to reach out. They need to know what they need. Head Start, my cohort, Barbara Waltz from the Head Start, was not able to be here, and I know that only about half the kids that are trying to get into Head Start programs can get there, so keep working on Head Start too, please. And also the quality rating system, and I'm hoping I'm talking about the same program, the Quality Improvement Rating System, QIRS. There was a pilot program last year, and actually my right across the street neighbor was in the pilot program, went through the program, was one of the first people to be in the QRS program, and she worked really hard, improved her program quite a bit, and I'm not sure what the regulation is with it, but it was good stuff. It really made her examine her program. She jumped through lots of hoops, and there were a lot of interesting things that she learned and her kids learned, and her environment changed and improved, and good program, so keep working on those. That's about it, I guess. I'm kind of a generalist. Like, I used to be an elementary teacher. Now I'm still teaching, but I'm just teaching, you know, 0 to 5-year-olds. And they're wonderful little people. Teaching isn't any different in the classroom than it is in my home. But I need to be a really good teacher, so keep expecting a lot from me, and I will be able to help these children out there. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's very good for us, I think, to hear firsthand, particularly from family child care providers. I think that's something that all of us struggle with, kind of bringing your voice to the table. And I know some other folks have been here on the licensing issue, and we need to have you involved in the legislative process, because that's where a lot of our kids are. And
a lot.
Yeah. And so the more we can work with you, yeah, I think that would be a good thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good. Any other further public testimony? You know, there's your opportunity if you always want to testify before legislature. We have 13 minutes. You can put on your resume. All right. Well, no. Trish wants to testify. Sorry. That was maybe next time. We'll see. Well, we'll have our last committee meeting then on Monday, 2:15 to 3:45, room 5. I do want to say that what I also see is as Monday being about, it's about amendments, but it is about ideas, and it's about, I hope, each committee member expressing their ideas on the process and the bill and on early childhood, because it's kind of our last chance for the year. I think you all know, too, that this bill does not go to the floor intact. This bill will be split in two in the Finance Committee. The Department of Education will pick up the education part of this bill. It will be the last article of the education bill, so it will be part of Representative Greiling's bill. The human services part of the bill will go with Representative Huntley's bill. So I hope also you will get the chance to talk on the floor, but realize we have huge skyscrapers over us when we're going to be talking, and it's going to be hard to bring the visibility to the issue that we could if we could go intact, but it's just the way it works. Representative Nornes?
I was just going to ask, I remember the old days when the bill would come on its own by itself, we'd have a chance to talk and then pass it. You know, this way, to me, it's going to get kind of lost. And I just question the wisdom of why we're doing it that way. And I know you probably can't change it, but I just think this should, both of those bills, both halves, should be separate bills coming to the floor so we can have a nice discussion, all vote to pass it, and feel good about that. Unfortunately, that won't happen.
Yeah, thank you. I know, thank you. And I think we were back on the first time this committee was in the legislature back in 97 session. And we, believe me, I agree with you. But it seems from a process standpoint, if we go through intact, the biggest problem is there's no match in the Senate. So there is no way to conference the bill. So they want to split it before.
They don't have an early childhood committee anymore?
No, with Representative Nornes when Member Senator Hottinger had it, and then, of course, he didn't run again this time, and then they changed their structure. The way the legislature works is, you know, sometimes the senior members take what the senior members want, and I think that it just didn't become part of their structure. So that's really the issue, is there's no match over there, so they have to get it in shape for conference early on. But I agree, and that's where I guess I would challenge each of you. I hope you will get up, because we know, let's see, education might be a 10-hour bill, and Health and Human Services is like a 16-hour bill, and so will we get lost?
Yeah.
Well, with that much time, we'll all have a chance to say something.
Yes, we will, whether we want to or not.
Thank you. With that, the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee is